The Dream of a Ridiculous Man by Fyodor Dostoevsky, Chapter 3. I have said that I fell asleep imperceptibly, and even while I seemed to be revolving the same thoughts again in my mind. Suddenly I dreamed that I picked up the gun and, sitting in my armchair, pointed it straight at my heart and not at my head. For I had firmly resolved to shoot myself through the head, through the right temple to be precise. Having aimed the gun at my breast, I paused for a second or two, and suddenly my candle, the table, and the wall began moving and swaying before me. I fired quickly. In a dream, you sometimes fall from a great height, or you are being murdered or beaten, but you never feel any pain unless you really manage somehow or other to hurt yourself in bed, when you feel pain and almost always wake up from it. So it was in my dream. I did not feel any pain, but it seemed as though with my shot everything within me was shaken and everything was suddenly extinguished, and a terrible darkness descended all around me. I seemed to have become blind and dumb. I was lying on something hard, stretched out full length on my back. I saw nothing and could not make the slightest movement. All around me, people were walking and shouting. The captain was yelling in his deep bass voice. The landlady was screaming, and suddenly another hiatus, and I was being carried in a closed coffin. I could feel the coffin swaying, and I was thinking about it, and for the first time, the idea flashed through my mind that I was dead as a doornail, that I knew it, that there was not the least doubt about it, and that I could neither see nor move, and yet I could feel and reason. But I was soon reconciled to that, and, as usually happens in dreams, I accepted the facts without questioning them. And now I was buried in the earth. They all went away, and I was left alone, entirely alone. I did not move. Whenever before I imagined how I should be buried in a grave, there was only one sensation I actually associated with the grave, namely, that of damp and cold. And so it was now. I felt that I was very cold, especially in the tips of my toes, but I felt nothing else. I lay in my grave, and, strange to say, I did not expect anything, excepting the idea that a dead man had nothing to expect in an incontestable fact. But it was damp. I don't know how long a time passed, whether an hour, or several days, or many days, but suddenly a drop of water, which had seeped through the lid of the coffin, fell on my closed left eye. It was followed by another drop a minute later, then another minute by another drop, and so on, one drop every minute. All at once, deep indignation blazed up in my heart, and I suddenly felt a twinge of physical pain in it. That's my wound, I thought. It's the shot I fired. There's a bullet there. And drop after drop still kept falling every minute on my closed eyelid. And suddenly I called, not with my voice, for I was motionless, but with the whole of my being, upon him who was responsible for all that was happening to me. Whoever thou art, and if anything more rational exists than what is happening here, let it, I pray thee, come to pass here too. But if thou art revenging thyself for my senseless act of self-destruction by the infamy and absurdity of life after death, then know that no torture that may be inflicted upon me can ever equal the contempt which I shall go on feeling in silence, though my martyrdom lasts for aeons upon aeons. I made this appeal and was silent. The dead silence went on for almost a minute, and one more drop fell on my closed eyelid, But I knew and believed infinitely and unshakably that everything would, without a doubt, change immediately. And then my grave was opened. I don't know, that is, whether it was opened or dug open, but I was seized by some dark and unknown being, and we found ourselves in space. I suddenly regained my sight. It was a pitch black night. Never had there been such darkness. We were flying through space at a terrific speed, and we had already left the Earth behind us. I did not question the being who was carrying me. I was proud and waited. I was telling myself that if I was not afraid, and I was filled with admiration at the thought that I was not afraid. I cannot remember how long we were flying, nor can I give you an idea of the time. It all happened as it always does happen in dreams, when you leap over space and time and the laws of nature and reason, and only pause at the points which are especially dear to your heart. All I remember is that I suddenly beheld a little star in the darkness. "Is that serious?" I asked myself, feeling suddenly unable to restrain myself, for I had made up my mind not to ask any questions. "No," answered the being who was carrying me, "that is the same star you saw between the clouds when you were coming home." I knew that its face bore some resemblance to a human face. It is a strange fact, but I did not like that being, and I even felt an intense aversion to it. I had expected complete non-existence, and that was why I had shot myself through the heart. And yet, there I was in the hands of a being, not human, of course, but which was, which existed. So there is life beyond the grave, I thought, with the curious irrelevance of a dream, but at heart I remained essentially unchanged. If I must be again, I thought, and live again at someone's unalterable behest, I won't be defeated and humiliated. "You know I'm afraid of you, and that's why you despise me," I said suddenly to my companion, unable to refrain from the humiliating remark with its implied admission, and feeling my own humiliation in my heart like the sharp prick of a needle. He did not answer me. But I suddenly felt that I was not despised, that no one was laughing at me, that no one was even pitying me, and that our journey had a purpose, an unknown and mysterious purpose that concerned only me. Fear was steadily growing in my heart. Something was communicated to me from my silent companion, mutely but agonizingly, and it seemed to permeate my whole being. We were speeding through dark and unknown regions of space. I had long since lost sight of the constellations familiar to me. I knew that there were stars in the heavenly spaces whose light took thousands of millions of years to reach the Earth. Possibly we were already flying through those spaces. I expected something in the terrible anguish that wrung my heart. And suddenly a strangely familiar and incredibly nostalgic feeling shook me to the very core. I suddenly caught sight of our sun. I knew that it could not possibly be our sun that gave birth to the Earth, and that we were millions of miles away from our sun, but for some unknown reason I recognized with every fibre of my being that it was precisely the same sun as ours, its exact copy and twin. A sweet, nostalgic feeling filled my heart with rapture. The odd, familiar power of the same light which had given me life stirred an echo in my heart and revived it, and I felt the same life stirring within me for the first time since I had been in the grave. "But if it is the sun, if it's exactly the same sun as ours," I cried, "then where is the Earth?" And my companion pointed to a little star twinkling in the darkness with an emerald light. We were making straight for it. "But are such repetitions possible in the universe?"
Can that be nature's law? And if that is an earth up there, is it the same earth as ours? Just the same poor, unhappy, but dear, dear earth, and beloved for ever and ever. Arousing, like our earth, the same poignant love for herself, even in the most grateful of her children, I kept crying, deeply moved by an uncontrollable, rapturous love for the dear old earth I had left behind. The face of the poor little girl I had treated so badly flashed through my mind. "You shall see it all," answered my companion, and a strange sadness sounded in his voice. But we were rapidly approaching the planet. It was growing before my eyes. I could already distinguish the ocean, the outlines of Europe, and suddenly a strange feeling of some great and sacred jealousy blazed up in my heart. How is such a repetition possible, and why? I can only love the earth I've left behind, stained with my blood, when, ungrateful wretch that I am, I extinguished my life by shooting myself through the heart. But never, never have I ceased to love that earth. And even on the night I parted from it, I loved it perhaps more poignantly than ever. Is there suffering on this new earth? On our earth, we can truly love only with suffering, and through suffering. We know not how to love otherwise. We know no other love. I want suffering in order to love. I want and thirst this very minute to kiss, with tears streaming down my cheeks, the one and only earth I have left behind. I won't accept life on any other. But my companion had already left me. Suddenly, and without, as it were, being aware of it myself, I stood on this other earth in the bright light of a sunny day, fair and beautiful as paradise. I believe I was standing on one of the islands which on our earth form the Greek archipelago, or somewhere on the coast of the mainland close to this archipelago. Oh, everything was just as it is with us, except that everything seemed to be bathed in the radiance of some public festival and of some great and holy triumph attained at last. The gentle emerald sea softly lapped the shore and kissed it with manifest, visible, almost conscious love. Tall, beautiful trees stood in all the glory of their green, luxuriant foliage, and their innumerable leaves, I am sure of that, welcomed me with their soft, tender rustle, and seemed to utter sweet words of love. The lush grass blazed with bright and fragrant flowers. Birds were flying in flocks through the air, and, without being afraid of me, alighted on my shoulders and hands and joyfully beat against me with their sweet fluttering wings. And at last I saw and came to know the people of this blessed earth. They came to me themselves. They surrounded me. They kissed me. Children of the sun. Children of their sun. Oh, how beautiful they were! Never on our earth had I beheld such beauty in man. Only perhaps in our children, during the very first years of their life, could one have found a remote, though faint, reflection of this beauty. Their eyes of these happy people shone with a bright lustre. Their faces were radiant with understanding and a serenity of mind that had reached its greatest fulfillment. These faces were joyous. In the words and voices of these people, there was a childlike gladness. Oh, at the first glance of their faces, I at once understood all. It was an earth unstained by the fall, inhabited by people who had not sinned and who lived in the same paradise as that in which, according to the legends of mankind, our first parents lived before they sinned, with the only difference that all the earth here was everywhere the same paradise. These people, laughing happily, thronged round me and overwhelmed me with their caresses. They took me home with them,
and each of them was anxious to set my mind at peace. Oh, they asked me no questions, but seemed to know everything already. That was the impression I got, and they longed to remove every trace of suffering from my face as soon as possible.